Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Vaccine Liability Edition, Part 2. Thank you for tuning in. On February 22, 2011, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Brusewitz v. Wyeth, Inc. The question in this case was whether a preemption provision enacted in the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986 bars state law design defect claims against vaccine manufacturers. By a margin of 6-2, the Supreme Court answered that question in the affirmative. Justice Scalia, joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy, Thomas, Breyer, and Alito, held that the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act preempts all design defect claims against vaccine manufacturers brought by plaintiffs who seek compensation for injury or death caused by vaccine side effects. Justice Breyer filed a concurring opinion. Justice Sotomayor, joined by Justice Ginsburg, dissented. Justice Kagan took no part in the consideration or decision of the case. To discuss the case, we have Mark A. Behrens, who is a partner at Shook, Hardy & Bacon, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Behrens.
Welcome, and thank you for listening to this 2011 podcast discussion of the United States Supreme Court's decision in Brusewitz v. Wyeth, Inc. The issue before the court was whether the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986 categorically preempts state tort law design defect claims against vaccine manufacturers for adverse side effects, or whether manufacturers must show, on a case-by-case basis, that the adverse side effects at issue could not have been avoided by a differently designed vaccine. The majority opinion, written by Justice Scalia, joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy, Thomas, Breyer, and Alito, held that the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act preempts all design defect claims against vaccine manufacturers brought by plaintiffs who seek compensation for injury or death caused by vaccine side effects. Justice Breyer filed a concurring opinion. Justice Sotomayor filed a dissenting opinion, joined by Justice Ginsburg. Justice Kagan took no part in the case. Congress enacted the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act in response to two overriding concerns. One, the inadequacy of a tort-based approach to compensation from the perspective of vaccine-injured persons and vaccine manufacturers. And two, problems related to instability and unpredictability in the childhood vaccine market due to vaccine manufacturers' fears of tort liability. Congress found that the number of childhood vaccine manufacturers had declined significantly, and that the few suppliers that remained had begun to question their continued participation in the market. For example, by 1984, only three commercial companies supplied DPT vaccine for the U.S. market. One of those suppliers estimated that its potential liability from DPT vaccine lawsuits was 200 times its annual sales for the vaccine. Such potential liability made it difficult for manufacturers to obtain affordable product liability insurance. By late 1984, two of the suppliers withdrew from the market, and the one remaining manufacturer experienced production problems. Congress responded by establishing the Vaccine Act and providing comprehensive government involvement in the development, approval, and monitoring of childhood vaccines. To ensure faster and more reliable compensation to the few vaccine users who suffer adverse side effects, Congress established a generous, no-fault administrative compensation structure. Funds for awards under the plan are supported by an excise tax on each vaccine dose. To receive compensation for a vaccine-related injury or death, an injured child or that child's legal representative must file a petition with the U.S. Court of Claims, often called the Vaccine Court. Covered childhood vaccines are listed on a table maintained by HHS. The table also lists selected injuries known to be associated with each vaccine and time limits for the onset of those conditions. A claimant who shows by a preponderance of the evidence that he or she used a vaccine and suffered an injury listed on the table within the specified time frame is presumptively entitled to compensation. The claimant need not establish any defect in the vaccine, any fault by the manufacturer, or even the identity of the manufacturer. A claimant who suffers a non-table injury must prove causation. The Vaccine Court compensates for current and future medical costs, cost of rehabilitation, counseling, and special education, lost earning capacity, up to $250,000 for pain and suffering, and up to $250,000 for vaccine-associated death. To ensure adequate representation, the program also pays reasonable attorney's fees and costs, including expert witness fees, for all claims filed in good faith, even if there's no award to the claimant. The Act forbids claimants from immediately resorting to a civil action for damages against vaccine manufacturers. Claimants must begin with a petition to the vaccine court. The Act, however, permits a claimant who is dissatisfied with a decision of the vaccine court to decline the award and file a civil action. Civil actions are also permitted if the vaccine court fails to issue a timely decision, that is, within 240 days. The Act generally provides that state law shall apply to civil actions alleging vaccine-related injuries. The application of state law is subject to some exceptions, one of which is the subject of the Brusewitz decision. Section 22(b)(1) of the Vaccine Act provides, quote, "No vaccine manufacturer shall be liable in a civil action for damages arising from a vaccine-related injury or death associated with the administration of a vaccine after October 1, 1998, if the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied by proper directions and warnings," end quote. States are barred under the Act from further limiting vaccine injury claims. The question before the court focused on Section 22(b)(1)'s preemption provision, which bars state law claims if the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied by proper directions and warnings. The tragedy giving rise to the case occurred in 1992. Petitioners Brusewitz are the parents of a formerly healthy 6-month-old girl, Hannah, who was injected with DPT vaccine manufactured by Respondent Wyeth. Immediately after receiving the vaccine, Hannah began to suffer scores of seizures that left her developmentally impaired. Petitioners alleged that a safer formulation of DPT was technologically available at the time and that Hannah's injuries could have been avoided if this differently designed vaccine had been administered. The Brusewitzes initially filed a petition with the vaccine court seeking compensation for her residual seizure disorder, which was not an injury listed on the vaccine table for DPT. The vaccine court dismissed the petition after concluding that Hannah suffered only non-table injuries and petitioners had not proven causation. The family then filed a civil action against Wyeth that was removed to federal district court in eastern Pennsylvania. Wyeth moved for summary judgment, arguing that the Act's preemption provision expressly precluded liability alleging a design defect in an FDA-approved vaccine, regardless of whether a safer alternative vaccine existed at the time of the child's vaccination. The district court granted Wyeth's motion, and the Third Circuit affirmed in a 2009 decision, reported at 561 F3rd 233. The United States Supreme Court affirmed the Third Circuit's decision. The majority held that the text of the Act's preemption provision categorically preempts all design defect claims against vaccine manufacturers, while leaving open the possibility for civil claims for manufacturing defects and failure to warn, both avoidable events. The majority also explained that the structure of the Act and of vaccine regulation in general reinforces a conclusion that Congress made a sensible choice to leave complex epidemiological judgments about vaccine design to the FDA and the National Childhood Vaccine Program rather than juries. The majority wisely appreciated that taxing vaccine manufacturers' products to fund a compensation program while leaving their liability for design defect virtually unaltered would hardly coax manufacturers back into the market. Justice Breyer's concurring opinion drew upon non-textual sources that reinforced the court's conclusion. He noted, for example, that a committee report accompanying the 1986 Act found that routine vaccination is one of the most spectacularly effective health initiatives this country has ever undertaken. These gains, he explained, are fragile. To allow a jury to second-guess federal expert determinations and threaten manufacturers of strict liability would undermine the Act's goal of encouraging the manufacture and sale of vaccines by diminishing the manufacturer's product liability. Justice Breyer also noted that the United States and leading public health organizations argued that petitioners' interpretation of the Act would threaten to halt the future production and development of childhood vaccines. The dissenting opinion filed by Justices Sotomayor and Ginsburg argued that Congress intended the Vaccine Act to preempt only design defect claims that result from unpreventable side effects, provided that the vaccine at issue is properly prepared and the warnings were adequate. In their opinion, the determination of whether a side effect was unavoidable would have to proceed on a case-specific basis. Drawing from selected post-enactment legislative history, the dissent argued that Congress did not declare all vaccine side effects unavoidable as a matter of law. Consequently, Congress did not intend to preclude claims like the Brucewitz's that are based on injuries caused by an allegedly scientifically outmoded design. Preempting such claims, they argued, would provide little to no incentive for manufacturers to improve the designs of vaccines that are already generating significant profit margins. The court's holding has significant potential implications for the stability of the vaccine market and ultimately for public health. Hundreds of civil actions, mostly involving design defect claims, have been filed against vaccine manufacturers that allege that childhood vaccines caused the recipient to develop autism. Petitioners in these cases have the burden to prove causation because their claim conditions are not on the vaccine injury table, a circumstance that reflects the broad and deep scientific consensus outside of litigation that childhood vaccines do not cause autism. While the dissent argued that such fears are wholly speculative, amici such as the American Academy of Pediatrics argued that a decision to permit design defect litigation to proceed in civil childhood vaccine injury cases would have emboldened these claimants to pursue a flood of civil actions with potentially devastating consequences for the vaccine supply and ultimately for public health.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.